to wash away everything. What about your virtue, your good deeds that you have done? That also must be washed away. Then the Buddha said, Brahmin, there must be that inner purification. You can't just wash your face and then attain Nirvana. Or you have to wash yourself in the waters of Dana, Sila, Bhavana, of Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Now see, from the beautiful, he took it from the background of that Brahmin, and then he preached to him. So we see, my friends, the inner purification should be there. And now the Buddha went on, the sixth meditation. He said, Rahula, meditate on anicca, impermanent nature of life, to get rid of pride, vanity. Because he thought to himself, I am the son of the Buddha. The Buddha who is a teacher of gods and men. I am the heir and I am the son. Now he had that pride, vanity. And then he said, now see, the Buddha was a psychologist. Because Rahula, being 18 years, he thought, I am the son of the Buddha. And he had that pride and vanity. To get rid of, to eliminate that pride and vanity, he gave the medicine of anicca, impermanence. I think we also should learn that lesson. Some of us think that we are going to live for eternity. One of the wonders of the world is that more than the other wonders that we find, the greatest wonder is that man seems to think that he will live for eternity. Shakespeare, in one of his plays, Macbeth, as I repeated in my first talk, he depicted the nature of life in the most vigorous and picturesque language when he said, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays are but lighted fools, out, brief candle. Life is but a poor player that frets and struts upon the stage, and then it is heard no more. It's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Anicca. Now see, put it, even Buddha couldn't have put it in such graphic terms. But the irony and paradox of it all is that Shakespeare was a moneylender. In spite of the fact that he was preaching anicca. Why? He didn't see the moral significance that anicca leads to dukkha. Even the scientist teaches that this is a vortex of energy. It consists of protons, electrons, neutrons, positrons. Ultimately, it's all energy. But they cling on to things because they don't have that. They have the philosophical insight, but that not that moral insight. Buddhism teaches you to see the real nature of life and not cling to things. But we cling like the crocodile. We have the grip of the crocodile. Tanna, Pacha, Upadana, Doctrine of Dependent Origination says. Tanna is just like stretching your hand. Upadana is a tenacious clinging, grasping, just like the grip of the crocodile. We also have the grip of the crocodile. We don't let go. We say, this is I, this is my, this is myself. This is my property. This is mine. And we seem to think that our body is ours. Nothing is ours. Many of us don't like to grow old. However much we may think of anicca or meditate on anicca, when our hair turns grey, we dye it. Why? We don't want anicca. Then when our teeth start falling, we have a denture. I don't say that you should not put on a denture. So far I have not done it, though my teeth has fallen. But anyway, I can never know, being a public speaker, I would have to put denture in time to come. But it has to be used to beautify, ornament your body. Why? Because we don't want anicca. But the Bodhisattva, our Buddha, Gautama Buddha, when he was practicing the paramis, Nekkamma Parami, when he was practicing the perfection on renunciation, he told his barber, whenever you see a shred of white hair on my head, please let me know. I will join the order, I will become a monk. So the Baba once pointed out to the Bodhisattva, the aspirant to Buddhahood, that there was a shred of white hair. And then and there, he became, joined the order. But in our case, we go on dying. Why? Because we don't see the philosophical nature. Now the beauty of the Buddha's teaching is, when a thing is anicca, impermanent, there cannot be any stable happiness. Therefore it is dukkha. Now we know that we like to be with our loved ones. We like to be with our wife and children, with our husbands. We like to be with our property, with our jewels. But when we die, we can't stop it. No one, not even the Buddha, can stop it. Now that is the insight that one should get through vipassana meditation. And if we have that insight, then we will be able to attain nirvana. We have to practice it step by step. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. So there must be that attitude of letting go. Let go, say goodbye. But we want to cling. We want to say, have everything for us. And we want to have the best of both worlds. Have nirvana as well as have all the good things of life as well. We can't have, do two things. So my friends, then the Buddha, last of all, he said to Rahula, meditate on anapanasati. Now he was building up his character. Then he was in a position to meditate on anapanasati, something abstract. Now, then only Rahula was able to conquer or control his restlessness. Anapanasati meditation helps one to calm the mind quickly. For the restless mind, the best type of meditation is to concentrate on your breath. Now they say when you want to go and meet an important person, a VIP, or the young girls want to go for the interview, viva voce. Now just take a few, when you are feeling nervous, take a few deep breaths, and then you get over your nervousness. Now see the physical reaction over the mind. Or when say when you are nervous, when you cling, when you grasp with your fingers, when you do like this, or when you box, want to box, it gives you some sort of courage. Now that is the physical reaction on the mind. The physical reaction on the mind. So we see, my friends, then the Buddha preached the Maha Rahulavada Sutta to Rahula. He didn't attain Nirvana. Then now the Buddha knew, after some time, when he was about 24, he was ripe, he was just like a lotus above the surface of the water. Now you have to build up your personality just like the teacher. Building up the personality of the student or pupil from the kindergarten, then the primary school, secondary, then he goes to the university, and then gradually you build up. Now see, this is a job that you have to do, no instant results. You have to do it gradually, and it depends on your past lives and the subject of meditation. Then the Buddha knew that the 5 mental faculties were right. Now these are the 5 conditions that are necessary to attain nirvana in this life. What are the 5 faculties? Make a note of it, some of you might know. First is saddha, confidence based on knowledge. Second is virya, energy, perseverance. Third is sati, mindfulness. Fourth is samadhi, concentration. 5 is panya. All these 5 faculties should be well balanced for you to attain nirvana in this life. Because to give a simple illustration, by faith, by bhakti alone you can't attain nirvana. By knowledge alone you can't attain nirvana. All these 5 should be well blended. Just like this. Now I have my hand. Just examine your hand. If you have 1 finger, you can't write. But I know certain people who can write with 1 finger. If you have 2 fingers, you can't use the pencil properly. All the 4 fingers should be there with the thumb. In like manner, the Buddha says, for you to attain nirvana, saddha, confidence based on knowledge, should be balanced with wisdom. There are some people who are very devout, who are full of faith, but the qualities of the head they don't have. There is no prajna, they have karuna. Others have karuna, but there is no prajna. Some have prajna without karuna. Both must be there. In equal terms, there should be a happy blending. It is something like this. The qualities of the head is compared to prajna. Qualities of the heart, like generosity, liberality, is compared to the heart. Today people have too much of the qualities of the head. They have no heart. They are heartless. Why the humanities are neglected today all over the world, even at the universities? Arts and science, now we did the human literature, arts and arts, all neglected. Music, that has a bellowing influence on one's personality. It chastens one. Other people have the qualities of the heart, but they don't have the brain. It is something like this. If you have too much of the qualities of the head and less of the heart, you become a clever rogue. Unscrupulous you become. Cunning. If you have too much of the qualities of the heart and less of the brain, you become a good-hearted fool. You must balance these two for to attain nirvana. Pachattam veditabho vinyu. Then the other two that should be balanced is virya and samadhi. Now see, just like Sona, I told you the case of Sona, he was very energetic, diligent, ardent. He was trying to attain nirvana in this life. Buddha cautioned him. He said, go slow. Don't hurry. Take the middle path. Just like a swimmer, if he swims fast, he'll be carried away by the tumultuous waves. If he goes slow, he'll be drowned. So, in this case, if you are too restless, you can't concentrate the mind. On the other hand, if you have too much of concentration of mind and without samadhi, if you are without virya, what happens? You become drowsy and sleepy. You know, when you meditate at times, some people seem to think that they meditate, but they fall asleep. That is kinha meditative, some sort of hypnotism. It's a spiritual sleep. Right? You have to be mindful all the time. Because we see meditation classes all over today in Sri Lanka. It has become a fad, a cult. Just like going to the cookery class, or going to the music class, or mathematics, it has become a fashion to go to meditation classes. If you don't have virtue, you must now be to put up this building. First of all, there must be the foundation. Those people don't treat their servants properly. They don't have the qualities of the heart, but they are going to meditate. So the main important point the Buddha says here, that it should be balanced, virya and samadhi. And who does this balancing? Sati, mindfulness. He is the person who sort of is mindful. If there is too much of, the mind is very drowsy, he tries to galvanize it. Now you have to know this. This theory must be known of meditation, visuddhimagga. And when the mind is very restless and agitated, then he should calm and still it. Now there are various methods, there is no time for me to go through all that. So we see that these five faculties should be balanced. Now, in the case of Rahula, Buddha knew that these five faculties were balanced in him. And through his paranormal clairvoyant vision, he knew that, and then he went to him. And then he preached to him. This is rather significant. See the mythology of the Buddha. The Satipatthana Sutta. Not straight away. When he was mature, he preached the Satipatthana Sutta, just like to the Kalamas. The Buddha preached the Kalama Sutta not to every Dick, Tom and Harry, to people in Kuru, in Kesaputta. They were mature philosophers and great religious teachers. They were able to understand it. So in the same way, the Buddha said, now he told Rahula, he was just like a lotus above the surface of the water. He spoke to him about the Salayatanas, about the sense, six sense organs, Dhammanupassana. He said, Rahula, now, what about this eye of yours? Can you say it is something permanent? Rahula said, he tried to get the answer, no, it is not something permanent. When I grow old, I will not be able to see it. Then can you say if a thing is anicca, it is something that brings you happiness? He said, no, it will lead to all types of diseases. And can you do anything with the, can you make the eye young as when you were a young person? No, you can't do it. Now can you, then he went on with the ear, then with the nose. Now through plastic surgery today, they can change your complexion to some extent. But they can't make an ugly man a beautiful man. So in the same way, now the Buddha want to introduce this deep doctrines of anicca, dukkha, anatta into the mind of Rahula. And then he said, Rahula, what about the external object that you see? Is that yours? He said, no. You can't get hold of it and say, this is mine, and hang on to it and keep it with you. Before you could say, before a few minutes, that will pass away. Now, by explaining to him the significance of the salayatana, chakku sota gana diva kaya, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind. And he said the external objects that come, the visual object, and the other auditory object, tactile objects, all those are impermanent, anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And that clinched the issue. And then it is said that when the Buddha preached in that manner, he attained Nibbana in that life. So you see, my friends, Nibbana can be attained in this life itself, provided that you cultivate the qualities that I just enumerated to you. That means you must have the proper environment, you must have the proper teacher, the proper type of meditation that you should get from the Kammatthana Guru, and then your character should be built up. Then only it will be possible to attain Nirvana in this life. The possibility exists. Now, can laymen like you and I, the monks, you know, you must withdraw yourself from the busyness of life to get that calm atmosphere, far from the madding crowd, as it were. You have to go into sylvan solitude with all the noise around you, you find it difficult. And when you go on, after your day's work, when you go to your shrine room, or you must have a place where you can go and meditate, a small shrine room with the Buddha statue, and you must withdraw yourself from your family, from the environment, physical environment. Now that's a difficult thing for laymen to do, because all the time they are preoccupied with worldly matters. To withdraw yourself from the physical environment, sometimes when you start meditating, that's been my experience, though I have been practicing meditation for the last 30 odd years. Sometimes, you know, when you're very busy in office, you meet all types of people and the radio station. All types of characters you find, to give a simple illustration. And it is a assorted crowd. All types of people, and you find all types of fashions also there. Ladies you find with all different, not unlike the ladies here, with saris and all kinds of fashions. So the point is, and then you come across all types of individuals also. And when you, from that atmosphere, you get into a shrine room. And without your knowledge, just like seeing a picture, some people can see that picture in their dreams also. When you are deeply in love with a person, passionately in love, sometimes you see your loved one in your mind's eye, or in your physical presence, because that environment to the mass media has a tremendous impact on you. And now when it comes to meditation and all that, to withdraw yourself from the physical environment sometimes becomes difficult. But to practice, you can do it. Because a certain person, you know, an accomplished musician, a certain young girl wants to learn music. And she went up to the musician, who was an accomplished musician, skillful musician, and said, I want some advice how I could be an accomplished, skillful musician like you. He said, I'll give you 3 bits of advice. 3. Not more than 3. He said, all right, very good. I want quick results. Then he said, first thing, practice, he said, day in and day out. He said, I'm doing that morning cycle. Come after school, sometimes in the evening I practice, even in the night. What is your second bit of advice? He said, practice. Second bit of advice. Then he said, he expected something more. What is your third? Practice, he said. I think that is, now we know the theory. Paryapti, pratipatti, prativeda. And we must practice the teachings of the Buddha. Not only one thing won't do, only meditation. There must be sila. Before meditation, if you practice sila, without sila, it might lead to dangerous consequences. It might lead to insanity as well. Those who have been practicing meditation without sila. It is something like this, trying to put the foundation, building without the superstructure, without the foundation. It will crash, crumble. And Francis Story, one of the great writers, English writers on Buddhism, in his book, The Buddhist Outlook, says, trying to practice meditation without sila is just like a brain surgeon trying to operate on a tumor in the brain of a patient in a cattle shed. Can it be done? That patient will die in double quick time. Why, with all the sterilized human, we must put him to the surgery. Then the instruments will be sterilized. We are trying to practice meditation without sila. The mind must, you know, when you start meditating, sometimes and try to think of one subject, if you have not been observing the five precepts, if you are leading a bad, vicious life, if you have been a mean and dirty type of person, putting other people into trouble, telling tales, in your meditation, what happens? Those things come like an avalanche. When you start stilling the mind, because now you are not thinking of the external world, now our minds are spread out. But when you try to concentrate your mind and think of one thing, all other things, you know, remorse, guilty feelings start creeping in on the subconscious mind. That's why sila is important. And as I said, if nirvana is a place, if nirvana is not a place, it is not a state of mind, it is an attainment. And if you want to go to nirvana, go within inverted commas. You must go in a tricycle, not in a bicycle. Nor in one wheeler. I'm putting it in so that you can understand. That means if you want to go to nirvana, if you must practice dana, sila, bhavana, sila, samadhi, panya. You can't go in a bicycle. Some people say, why bows of sila? Let us meditate. And without dana, we can attain nirvana. Like going one wheeler. You can't go to nirvana in one wheeler. Nor in a bicycle. Some people say there is no use of dana and sila. We'll practice samadhi and panya straight away. No. All three must be practiced. It's like a tripod. All the three legs should be there. If one leg is not there, it will crumble. So my friends, I come to the end of the talk to you. This is a vast subject. But I would like, within there about 20 minutes more to go, if you have any questions that you would like to ask on this subject, I have given you some of the most important points about the attainment of Nirvana in this life. I spoke to you about the various conditions, the various prerequisites that you should fulfill if you are to attain Nirvana. And the possibility of attaining Nirvana remains. But the attainment of it depends on the individual. Because the Buddha said in the Parinibbana Sutta, so long as my disciples practice the Dhamma Vinaya, it is Dhamma Vinaya, not only Dhamma, Vinaya, the rules, then the world will not be devoid of arahats. And today when we consider the world today, we are living in a highly commercialized, competitive civilization, and people say that there are not many arahats. There are few. In Burma, in Thailand, certain countries, they say there are arahats, people who attain Nirvana. The possibility exists. Only thing is that it depends on the individual. Now, the possibility of your studying for the BA degree in arts or in sciences exists. But getting through depends on you. It is in your hands. And there, you should have the sansaric maturity, the paramidana, then the correct type of teacher. The teacher must be there giving the proper type of meditation. And then you must balance the faculties, saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, prajna. Because those five faculties should be well balanced. Because in all religious teachings, faith is emphasized. Bhakti, devotion. But Buddhism says that you can't attain the ultimate truth, nibbana, with faith only, saddha. Science says knowledge. True knowledge that we can attain. All the ultimate, unravel the mysteries of the universe. Plunge the depths of the human mind. and try to get rid of all the defilements. Because they say the mind is the gold mine as well as a rubbish heap. Very nice, gold mine. We are only entertaining the rubbish heap. But the gold mine can be cultivated through meditation. The psychologists also say that. But they don't give the technique and the method. The Buddha gives the Noble Eightfold Path. But in Buddhism, faith and knowledge themselves won't do. According to Buddhism, faith, knowledge comes, but wisdom lingers. There's a thing called Buddhist wisdom. Now there is scientific knowledge, but that is mundane. Buddhist wisdom is something, seeing anicca dukkha anatta, that comes through seal and samadhi. You have to cultivate it. So Buddhism says that you can attain nirvana, not only with saddha, confidence based on knowledge and knowledge, wisdom, but there must be the other faculties of virya, energy, then there must be mindfulness and concentration of mind. And mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness, ultimately plays a very powerful and significant role. It is the thing that guides and directs you. Because unless you are mindful, you will not be able to know to what extent the faculties are developed to you and to what extent they are not developed. So you have to harmonize and you have to balance the faculties. Just like the five hand, you find the four fingers and the thumb. All must be there for you to attain nirvana. So my friends, it was indeed an honor and privilege to have come here and to be associated with you young people. And I also become younger, spiritually younger also, by being associated with you. And it's really a delight to be here in this country and to see the developments that are taking place. And we have good Kalyanamittas, elderly people, good friends. That's a very important thing, to guide and when there is Venerable Kinanda Dhammananda, to guide and direct you. Because today, young people in the other parts of the world, they are going astray because they don't have proper guidance. So you should be very happy that you have such people to guide and counsel him, because the Buddha told Ananda once, Ananda taught to himself that Kalyanamitta, good friendship, is part of the holy life. The Buddha said, Ananda, don't say so. Kalyanamitta, good friendship, good guidance, is the whole of the holy life. So for you to attain nirvana, there must be good friends, and you must be guided properly, you must get the good advice and training, then only it should be possible to attain nirvana. So may you also make the necessary efforts and develop the qualities I just enumerated to you, and may you also attain nirvana as early as possible. But I don't guarantee that it can be attained depending on the individual, but may by the blessings of the Triple Gem and by the practice of the teachings, may you also get out of samsara and attain that blissful goal of nirvana. Thank you.
Talking about meditation and nirvana, we are seeking for bliss and happiness. As claimed by the drug addicts or the drug user, they have experienced this sort of bliss. How is this different from what we have attained in this meditation? May I know?
I think that's a good question, because even our president also raised that question about happiness. If you have that happiness, you get that glimpse of nirvana. Now, there is two types of happiness. Happiness that we derive to the sense pleasures, that we get to satisfying the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body. Now that is called samisasapa. That is something transient and transitory. Other one is the calming down of the passions through meditation. Now to give a simple illustration. When you are drowsy or when you are hungry, you take some food. Like we take a chicken curry, or we'll take fried rice or something like that. You can take it up to a certain limit. If a friend of yours comes and tells you, why not take another meal? That very thing that gave you happiness, pleasure at one moment can give you pain. Then we'll say you are fond of listening to music. And you play the same record. We'll say Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. You have that music, the record, and you play it for 24 hours, you get fed up of it. And say early morning, your wife or your mother or father comes and tells you, after you have slept 8 hours in the night, daughter, Asana. Why not sleep another 8 hours, today being Sunday? You get fed up of it. Then in your classes from morning, you start at 8 o'clock, up till 3:30 in the evening, the same lesson, arithmetic, is being taught. What happened? All the students will fail in their arithmetic. And today if I tell you that by some stroke of luck or some magic, I will not end this talk till 6 o'clock this evening. There won't be a single soul here. Why? You can't be seated like this. How long can you be seated? For about 3 or 4 hours. Then you feel like walking. How long can you walk? 3 or 4 hours. Then you feel like reclining. Then you feel like sleeping. These are the pleasures of life that you get. If you overdo a thing, do it more than that, what will happen? It will give you pain. That is just like an eczema, a skin disease. So long as you go on scratching it, it gives you some happiness. I won't say it happens, some pleasure. But when the skin disease is healed, then that is the real happiness. Now in our case, now we don't value what health is because we are healthy. If you are suffering from disease, then you know the value of health. So to take the same simile, our sense organs are always scratching. The eye is scratching for beautiful objects. The ear is just like that eczema. The ear is scratching to listen to more beautiful music. That's why in the radio you find listeners' request. Then the mouth is always scratching. They want to eat more food, more and more. Now that is a form of scratching. And this will go on. I told the Sarayatana to our Rahula, you want more and more. But in Buddhism it says you must control it. And it is just like that wound being healed. Avedika. You know, in Sri Lanka there was a monk, a very famous monk, Palani Sri Vajradhana. When he was alive, he was the teacher of Venerable Narada and Venerable Piyadasitera. He gave a talk on Nirvana. And he said, Nirvana is the highest bliss. Nibbanam paranam sukham. Then there was a lady who was so taken up. An old lady was so taken up by this talk. She was very fond of eating jack. You know what jack is? Jackfruit. They find jackfruit. So this lady came up to the Mahanayaka there and said, in Nirvana do you find big jack trees? We are trying to judge Nirvana from the things that we enjoy here. If we can get a better biryani feed or chicken curry feed, now we are thinking of the pleasure, better television sets, more exquisite food, nectar and all that. We think of Nirvana in terms of what we experience here. But Nirvana is something unconditioned. Nibbanam paranam sukham. That sukham comes happiness, not the happiness that we experience. It is something relative. But that happiness is due to the calming down of the passions. Now those who meditate know that. Now in our case, it is a gratification of the senses. Now it is something like this. Mostly, you know, in these sense pleasures that we enjoy, it is we really enjoy in retrospect and in anticipation. The actual moment of experiencing is fleeting. Now sometimes when you go on a journey, you know, you plan and then do all kinds of things to go on that journey. You plan. And then actually go on that journey. And then you come back and in retrospect, you go on thinking of it, build castles in the air. Yeah, you enjoy it. You relive those experiences. Relive those golden memories. But the actual pleasure is short-lived. You have any type of pleasure, you know, as I said, it's relative. For the time being, and then before you could grasp it, it just slipped through your fingers. That those are the pleasures that we are. But in the Dhamma, as your president mentioned, in the case of Dhamma, that experience of letting go, of not grabbing, that happiness is there. The happiness that is free, nekkamma sukha, or is a niramisa sapa, viraga sapa, of letting go, that is a great thing. Only people, you know, the point is now, we find the drug addicts, sex addicts, and that happiness that they derive, they are not able to enjoy it. Why? Because the point is they have been addicted to it. And we seem to think that we possess certain things, our wife and children, our possessions, but ultimately those things possess us. So the greatest possession, as I said, is the triple gem, the priceless jewel. All other jewels are perishable goods. It's the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. That is the thing that will help you to attain the highest bliss. Any other question?
Make a speech. I have a light question. It can be said that the human existence is a high plane of existence. It's a noble plane because we have opportunities for purification. Now, if you note our world population, it's on the increase. Not arithmetically, I mean straight, it's in fact exponential. Can we then speculate to say that perhaps more good is prevailing over evil? And is that the trend?
Was the human population increasing?
Yeah.
I don't think so. But the point is, we are thinking of infinity. And we are thinking of not only the human birth, we are thinking of the other heavenly births. You know, there are 31 states of being and becoming. About the Devaloka, Brahmaloka, now there are beings dying there and they have been born here. And one day the Buddha, you know, took some grains of sand into his fingertips and asked the monks, given in the text itself, what is more, the grains of sand in my fingertips or the grains of sand in the vast expanse of the earth? Then the Buddha asked the monks, told the monks, that those beings who die here as human beings and are born into woeful states of existence in the hells, Buddhist hells are temporary, not permanent, and the ghost realm is just like the grains of sand in the vast expanse of the earth. And those who are born again as human beings are just like the grains of sand in my fingertips. So our permanent home, the home where we dwell for a longer time, is the hells, apayas. So the human realm is a very difficult realm. But the point is, we must not think we are dealing with infinity. And Buddha says, Satta Vise Achintai. Infinity of space and time, and infinity of beings, infinity of world systems. And if you subtract anything from infinity, it remains infinity. But if you think of the human realm and compare the Deva and the ghost realm, it's nothing. Devas and ghosts and other human beings, other beings are more. So that doesn't mean that because of the scientific development and all, with advancement of medicine, life has been prolonged to about 70 years now. Those it were less, then infertile mortality, you must think the science, has been reduced. Children live longer now. So it doesn't mean that because the human population now it is so happened, I would not like to be born in the human realm in the next life. Why? Because the conditions are not very conducive. Because they say by the turn of the century, 20th century, there won't be space on earth. And you might not get the food that you want. So the best thing is to be born in the Tusita Devaloka, where our Bodhisattva is, Maitreya Buddha. And the atmosphere is more congenial. And we must come here because the middle path, not much of suffering, not much of happiness. In the Devalokas, there is too much of happiness. And when there is too much of happiness, we don't think of dukkha. When there is too much of dukkha in the misery, then we can't practice the Noble Eightfold Path. So the human realm is midway between the extremes of happiness and the extremes of sorrow. So that's why we are able to realize Nibbana. So one cannot say, because the human population is increasing here due to various conditions, and we must think of other beings coming here. But there are other world systems where the population is very much more.